their lives into their hands every day, even in a routine traffic stop. It is a truly dangerous job, and it is one that most people couldn't take the stress and the danger and the occasional boredom. We need to be deeply grateful. Blue lives matter, friends. And unfortunately, perhaps it takes a local local loss to renew that fact. Blue lives matter. Without the police, this society would just be a jungle. Now, Officer Jose Chavez, a dedicated two-year veteran, and I got this off of a GoFundMe page for him. But Officer Jose Chavez, a dedicated two-year veteran, was an officer, a father, a friend, a son, a brother, and boyfriend. And he was supposed to take Friday off, but decided to work additional hours. During his shift, he conducted a traffic stop and was approaching the occupants of a car and was suddenly shot by one of the occupants from inside the vehicle as he approached with paperwork in his hand by a real coward. He was airlifted to a hospital where he later lost his battle in this world. He is survived by a girlfriend, two daughters of the age of 5 and 14, a mother, a father, two sisters, nieces, and nephews. Anyway, consider supporting his family, whatever the insurance policy for him is really not going to cover raising those kids, probably. And anyway, in the coming days, now, nationally, with a gathering storm threatening our presidential election, let's take stock. Hillary could face a new indictment as more emails surface that were supposedly lost. And what about her many sicknesses? She bobs more than Muhammad Ali in his prime. She looks about as spry and healthy as a mummy removed from a South American pyramid after 5,000 years. Pickled. Meanwhile, I have to ask, will Trump finally implode as he is now replacing his campaign manager and bringing on staff? Well, good morning, folks. 609, I was in trial for a couple of days, so had to be to court early and couldn't really be here. But anyway, back better than ever, hopefully. And to let you know that I've seen all kinds of numbers out there in terms of the race, and it's a 2-point race right now, I think. I think that you have to remember, in the same way that science is misused in the name of global warming to save the planet, and so these scientists, whether they're doing it on purpose or they're just incompetent, and there's a ton of falsification out there that I could go into. Maybe we should do a show on that. But there is a misuse of polling, because people see polling as scientific. And if Trump is down 25 in one state or another, he's down 17 in this area, then of course he doesn't have a shot. The race is just starting. There's been a negative cycle or two about Trump, but don't forget that Hillary Clinton has got to go through the debates with Trump. If she doesn't come up with an excuse, her best bet is to claim laryngitis or admit that she has seizures. And if she gets in a debate with Trump, she's going to have a seizure. But she's got to go through that, and there's supposedly a November surprise. Julian Assange does not like Hillary Clinton. Julian Assange, who runs WikiLeaks, saw that one of his people was shot down in the street and offered a $20,000 reward. And I can bet that Trump is or Hillary is going to have a lot of uphill climbing before she gets to the place where she can claim triumph over anybody. She's got more negatives than, in the sense that in her negative numbers are bad. Trump's are worse, but she has more negatives to deal with. I think she's got by far more skeletons in her closet. So Anyway, let's focus on the officer that was shot who gave his life. Now, some people might say, well, it was a routine traffic stop. He didn't die as a hero. He died as a hero, and it just proves that, you know, I mean, why was he pulling this person over? He was pulling the person over because they had broken the law one way or the other, or there was something suspicious. He was keeping the road safe. He was keeping the community safe. And it just goes to show you that the police always put their lives on the line. When something goes wrong, who gets called? An attorney a lot of times. When something goes really haywire, who gets called? The police. I mean, the worst situation police are called into. And they don't leave until the situation is taken care of. So we are lucky to have the professional police force that we do have around this country. And anyway, let me just play a little bit from KOAT. Community gathers as fallen officer's body returns to hatch. And it's 6:13, and today is the 17th of August. Check this story out. On a fallen hero. And I am not hearing this, so okay. Here we go.
Yeah, that's right, Doug. Here's a copy of the email that shows two different Delta Airlines representatives telling you.
All right. I've got to, I think this is running and I got to reboot it, but, I'll have this here for you right now. But this officer's body, you know, and I didn't mention this, but I was driving out to Hatch to check into one of my cases on Friday evening, kind of Friday afternoon, and passed this red car that was up on the back of a tow truck with a police car in the front and the police car in the back. And so we had just found out that we couldn't go down I-25, so I just, of course, suspected that was involved in the crime, and it was the I think it was the car they hijacked or the first car that they used. So here we go.
Well, Doug, is a touching sight today. Chavez's community coming together to let him and his family know his sacrifice didn't go unnoticed. Dozens of blue balloons floated up into the air just as Officer Jose Chavez returned to Hatch, the first of many silent gestures that spoke volumes to the man who gave his life for his community. Officer Chavez was shot during a traffic stop last week. Today, thousands of New Mexicans lined I-25 with signs, salutes, and American flags as a motorcade escorted him from Albuquerque back home to Las Cruces.
It just breaks my heart that they lost one of their own.
There aren't any words. There just aren't.
This solemn procession comes as we learn more about Chavez's death. Action 7 News obtained court documents today that detail the final moments of his life. In it, another Hatch officer describes pulling up behind Chavez at the traffic stop last Friday. He says he saw Chavez standing at the front passenger side window speaking to three people in a silver car. But before he could get out, he says Chavez reached for his gun. Next thing he knows, Chavez is falling to the ground and the car is speeding away. Investigators say Jesse Haynes shot Chavez in the neck. He and James Nelson were both fugitives from Ohio, wanted for murder. There was also a third man in the car, Tony Jones, a hitchhiker they picked up along the way. Jones is now facing drug charges, but police say he's cooperating as a witness in Chavez's killing.
First degree murder. It's that plain and simple. We will use every bit of evidence we have, every resource at our disposal, and every tenacity we have in our bones to try to bring justice to Daniel County.
And we've just learned today that there will be a public funeral for Officer Chavez this Sunday at 3 at the Pan American Center in Las Cruces. Getz's funeral home is organizing it for free. Back to you.
All right. So I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of people who didn't even know the officer. I don't think I'd ever met him. Who are going to be there at that funeral as a show of support for his family, for the community, and also for police officers. it is just, you know, you hear all this stuff about the shootings on TV and the Black Lives Matter and the police getting shot and everything. And of course, this is not related to that, but you don't really think it's going to hit home here. But he sounded like a good guy. And some of the officers that I've talked to just said he was a real solid citizen, a great personality, always upbeat. And one of those cops that wanted to go into enforcement to make the world a better place. Let's take a break and come back and talk a little bit more about the story at 6:17 on the 17th of August. Kelly O'Connell back in the studio. Much appreciation to Keith Wubley, who is I always enjoy listening to, and he was gracious enough to help me out when I needed a little coverage. And 6:18 on the button name, Las Cruces 523-1450 to call in. We'll be right back. And this is Dexter Gordon, one of the top 50 or 100 greatest jazz albums. Go. Okay, so the guy that shot Officer Chavez was already wanted for murder. And so he had sounds like he had spent his whole life in and out of the justice system. And so one of those career criminals that doesn't seem to be able to get a thought in his head that's not illegal. And Jesse Haynes, 38, is charged in the U.S. District Court for the District of New Mexico with carjacking resulting in serious bodily injury. And I've got a little bit on this right here from KOBE.
The Ohio fugitive accused of shooting and killing Hatch police officer Jose Chavez now faces federal carjacking and weapons charges. That follows first-degree murder charges filed by the state against 38-year-old Jesse Haynes. The New Mexico law enforcement community will gather Sunday to say goodbye to Officer Chavez. Many New Mexicans lined I-25 in support just yesterday as Officer Chavez's body was transported from Albuquerque to Las Cruces. His funeral Sunday is open to the public. It's at New Mexico State University at the Pan American Center. It starts at 3:00.
All right. So I'm just going to guess that that place is going to be pretty full. And this guy from heavy.com, Jesse Haynes, pardon me, five facts. Haynes and Nelson, his buddy, were wanted for aggravated murder in Ohio. And from the police blotter on that, from the wanted poster, the Ross County Sheriff reports that his office currently has warrants for aggravated murder for 36-year-old James D. Nelson and 38-year-old Jesse D. Haynes. The warrants are for the murder of 62-year-old Theodore Timmons. James Nelson, described as being 5'7", tall, 165 pounds, brown hair, brown eyes. Jesse Haynes is described as being 6-foot-tall, 195, blonde hair and green eyes. Both suspects believed to have fled the state after committing the murders. They both should be considered armed and extremely dangerous. Both suspects have a violent criminal history. So the guy they killed was a bus driver, and he was shot multiple times. And when the suspects fled the scene of the shooting with Hatch officer Jose Chavez, they left at more than 100 miles an hour. And CNN is saying that Chavez was pulling over a Lexus and Hatch. They were driving an old Lexus, I think 1990 model. And then the Haynes was in the passenger seat and then shot out into the officer. So while the officer was holding paperwork and reaching for his service weapon. The suspects carjacked a car. They grabbed a car on the way, I think maybe at a rest stop, but they got somebody's car. When the guy wouldn't go with them, they shot him in the stomach. And this lane officer was a father of two, as we've already found out. So anyway, consider reaching out to that family in their hour of need. Here's a little bit from CNN on fallen officers. 37 shot dead in the line of duty in 2016, and some of which have been extremely high profile, like the ones that were shot down in Dallas.
Cop, you're worrying about them all the time. It's a dangerous profession, one of the most dangerous jobs. There's not too many jobs where, you know, when bullets are being fired, you have to run into it. I'm always thinking about my daughter and my nephew every day. Anytime I hear of a New York City police officer crashing their vehicle or getting shot at or getting shot, those are the first two calls that I make.
No one wants their child or their significant other to get hurt in the line of duty. But it's just something that, you know, you learn to appreciate every day with them.
My husband always tells me he became a police officer to protect the community. And if there ever was a time that even he was killed in the line of duty, he did what he wanted to do, was to protect others.
I tell my kids I have a dangerous job and that someday I may not come home. I'm a realist. I'm not going to put pink clouds in the sky and tell them that everything's going to be all right.
We've got to pray every single day for that boy. And I just pray that everybody else will be thinking about our officers throughout the country.
Most officers are good people, and they choose every day to walk away from their families and put their lives on the line every day.
I'm here to protect everyone, my children as well as somebody else's children.
We are still good people. There are still good law enforcement officers out there. You know, but I'm proud of my husband and I'm proud of my daughter.
All right, a little clip from CNN there, and they've got some statistics here about some of the police officers that were shot in 2016. Police officer Glasser in Arizona, Phoenix, responding to a report that a man was stealing guns from his father's home, was shot on May 18th. He died a day later. Arkansas Sheriff's Corporal Bill Cooper, 65-year-old Sebastian County Sheriff's Deputy, undoubtedly on the verge of retirement, when he and other officers responded to a 911 call at the manufactured home at a trailer, August 10th in rural western Arkansas. The caller said a man had pulled a gun on his father. When deputies and officers arrived, the son, wearing body armor, fired a rifle repeatedly, killing Cooper, injuring another officer. California officer Jonathan D. Guzman, 43, of the San Diego Police Department, and another officer were shot as they tried to stop someone in the city's South Crest section on the night of June 28th. A fellow officer arrived and rushed D. Guzman to a hospital where he died. Colorado Sheriff's Deputy Derek Gear, 40, Mesa County Sheriff's Department, died February 10, 2 days after he was shot as he tried to detain a man in Grand Junction. And he had been responding to a report of a person walking past an office building with a handgun under his armpit near railroad tracks. He saw a person matching that description, tried to stop him and even tasered him, but the person shot Gear. So think about that. You come up to somebody, and just think about all of these incidents where people get shot, and sometimes it's black people, and there is a fury out there that the police officer shot this person, and there's a rush to judgment, and there is no fact-finding until days later. After the story is already in everybody's mind, another unjustified, you know, police-related shooting, and it turns out this guy, he should have had his pistol in this guy's face from the beginning. He shouldn't even have tried to tase him. Another shooting in Colorado, another killed officer, Sheriff's Corporal Nate Kerrigan, 35 of Park County Sheriff's Department, fatally shot while he and two other deputies were trying to serve an eviction notice. Think about that. You know, that's just crazy. A 13-year veteran in Georgia, Major Greg Barney of the Riverdale Police Department, helping police in Clayton execute a drug-related warrant at an apartment where he was fatally shot. 25-year veteran, had a wife and two kids. And he was responding to a call about a suspicious person when he encountered a man who shot him and fled the scene. Died 2 days later before his 31st birthday. He left behind a fiance, two sons, a five-month-old daughter, and a stepson. From Indiana, Sheriff's Deputy Carl Kuntz. Howard County Sheriff's Deputy Carl A. Kuntz, 27, shot and killed March 20th in a shootout at a Russiaville trailer park while trying to serve a warrant for a man accused of failing to appear in court on charges of illegally possessing a syringe. One of his colleagues was also shot. The shooter, the man named in the warrant, then fatally shot himself in the head. Why didn't he just do that in the beginning? Kansas. Detective Brad Lancaster shot and killed May 9th while responding to a call of a suspicious person near a casino. Gunman fled in the detective's vehicle. And also, Captain Robert David Melton, officer shot and killed on July 19th while chasing people who'd allegedly been involved in a drive-by shooting. So think about that. You already know that somebody is crazy and is doing drive-by shootings, and you have to go and try to chase them down. I'm amazed that police don't shoot more people. Louisiana, Sheriff's Deputy David E. Michelle Jr., Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Deputy, shot dead on June 22nd during a confrontation with a man he had approached in the street. Sheriff's Deputy Brad Garofalo, 45 East Baton Rouge Parish Sheriff's Office, one of three Louisiana law enforcement officers shot dead, and one of six shot in total on July 17th by Gavin Long in Baton Rouge. Officer Matthew Gerald, 41 of Baton Rouge Police Department, was one of three Louisiana law enforcement officers shot dead. And Corporal Montrell Jackson, 32 of the Baton Rouge Police Department. Maryland Sheriff's Deputy Patrick Daly of the Hartford County Sheriff's Office, one of two deputies fatally shot at or near a restaurant in Abingdon. They were called to a Panera Bread restaurant to investigate a man, but as Daly talked to him, the man shot him in the head. The man fled toward nearby apartments where he shot and killed Deputy Mark Logsdon. He was then shot by police. Sheriff's Deputy Mark Logsdon, already mentioned, Officer Jack A. Colson, and other Prince George County police officers were in a shootout with a gunman who'd ambushed them outside their police station when Colson was shot and killed by mistake by a fellow officer, Massachusetts Officer Ronald Tarantino Jr. I haven't heard of the vast majority of these people, these officers. Officer Ronald Tarantino Jr., 42-year-old Auburn police officer, making a traffic stop in the early morning, May 22, when an occupant of the car fatally shot him and fled police. I want to know how many of these shootings were encouraged by the Black Lives Matter movement and other idiotic groups. Michigan, court bailiff Ronald Kensel, 63, one of two court bailiffs shot dead and killed July 11th in a courthouse in Berrien County by an inmate who had grabbed a deputy's gun outside of a holding cell. Supervising court bailiff Joseph Zangaro, 61, also killed. I think those are former cops right there, and that were had transitioned into bailiffs, which are also police officers. Mississippi, Special Agent Lee Tarrant, 44, an agent with the Mississippi Bureau of Narcotics, fatally shot on the morning of February 20 as he and other officers entered a home in Luca, Mississippi, trying to end a six-hour standoff with a man inside. Tart, 22-year veteran of law enforcement, had been with the Mississippi Bureau of Narcotics since 2000. He left a wife and children. New Mexico, we know about that. North Dakota Officer Jason Moser, 33, Fargo Police Department, shot on February 10th during a standoff following a domestic disturbance. Died the next day, 6-year veteran, left a wife and two kids. Officer Thomas Cottrell in Ohio, shot behind the municipal building in the village of Danville. Suspect eventually arrested. Minutes before Cottrell was killed, authorities said a suspect's ex-girlfriend called them to say he had taken off with his weapons and was looking to kill an officer. Wow. And the officer walks right into that. Think about it. Officer Stephen Smith, Columbus Police Officer Stephen Smith, in an armored vehicle, April 10, serving on a SWAT team, trying to serve a warrant for alleged arson when a man inside an apartment fired a shot into the vehicle, hitting Smith. Wow. He left a wife and two kids. Oregon Sergeant Jason Gooding and another officer were trying to arrest a wanted man on the street in Pacific Coast town of Seaside. I used to live a few miles away from there, about 20 miles. The suspect resisted arrest and shot Gooding, who returned fire and hit him. Gooding and 39-year-old Seaside police officer and the suspect later died in the hospital. I haven't heard about most of these. South Carolina officer Alan Lee Jacobs, Greenville police officer Jacobs, fatally shot March 18th by a 17-year-old boy. And Jacobs and one of the other officers trying to interview a teen about a weapons purchase, but the teen ran. The officers chased, and the teen opened fire, hitting him. The teen then committed suicide. All of these people committing suicide, why don't you commit suicide first before you kill somebody else? Tennessee Special Agent DeGron Frazier, a Tennessee Bureau of Investigation agent working undercover, trying to buy illicit drugs from someone. They were sitting in a vehicle, sitting in a sting operation, when the target pulled out a gun and tried to rob Frazier. Frazier was shot once and died at the hospital. Texas Officer David Hofer, fatally shot in a park in Euless on March 1st, responding to a call of a suspicious person. Senior Corporal Lauren A. Hearns, Dallas, one of five shot in that shooting from the spree on Dallas on July the 7th. Officer Michael Kroll taken, Sergeant Michael Smith, Officer Brent Thompson, Officer Patrick Zem Arepa, all shot in Dallas. And Utah Officer Douglas Barney, 44, United Police Department of Greater Salt Lake, shot and killed while investigating a traffic accident. Look at all the different ways these, you know, they're doing all kinds of different things when they get shot. So everything is dangerous for these police officers. Virginia Trooper Chad D. P. Dermeyer, 37, participating in a training operation with other troopers at a Greyhound bus station when a man walked away from his luggage. Dermeyer approached the man, and after the two talked for a few seconds, the man pulled a gun from his waistband and fatally shot the trooper. Officer Ashley Gundon from Virginia, first day on the job with Prince William County Police. Gundon, 28, shot and killed February 27th while responding to a report of domestic violence at Woodbridge House. So all of those dying this year. And then there's all the other police officers that were shot and not killed. I mean, an extremely dangerous job. And there's a movement out there to demonize cops. It's just crazy. This whole society is just full of craziness right now. 639 Kelly O'Connell AM, Las Cruces AM 1450, the 17th of August, 523-1450 to call in. We'll be right back. Okay, I'm going to come back next hour and do some more dedication to the officer who was killed in the line of duty, Officer Chavez. In the meantime, I've got a little bit of weather news for you. There's an unprecedented flood in Louisiana, a 100-year flood, and we've heard that term so many times in the recent last year or two in places like Carolina, Texas, and I mean, just name it. There's been a lot of so many places that are just recently, it was in Virginia. So the flood in Louisiana is starting to, the waters are starting to go down, but 40,000 homes impacted by deadly flood in Louisiana. John Bel Edwards, governor, said it is just unparalleled. They've never seen anything like it. And don't forget that the You know, that part of the world has, you know, if you go to New Orleans, it's built underwater or below sea level, I should say. And so they're used to having water around and even a lot of rain and stuff, but there's just nothing that we've ever seen in Louisiana like this before. So here is just a little bit on that. And then there's a massive fire in California that is 0% contained, and I think 52,000 people moved. So anyway, here's on your flooding. And as I say, Louisiana, and it's also in Mississippi and Houston, which has been through flood after flood after flood, I think had probably 5 or 10 inches too.
Flooding crisis in South Louisiana is not over. There are thousands of people still displaced from their ruined homes. The death toll so far, at least 11. Now, on a positive note, the river levels are dropping. But look at this. I mean, that's a cow just walking around in somebody's driveway. Unfortunately, with those river levels coming down, it's exposed a lot of damage and destruction. At least 40,000 homes around Baton Rouge and other towns and cities have been affected by this. This is a look at the radar. Not as bad as what we saw, but you know what? There's still been some rain, and it's making everybody nervous. Also making folks nervous, the governor, John Bel Edwards, he's warning folks of standing water all over South Louisiana. You don't want to go there. Please avoid that at all costs. I will say, though, people are stepping in to help. Celebrities like Taylor Swift. Oh, who doesn't love Taylor Swift? She has said she will donate $1 million to Louisiana flood relief. You go, Taylor Swift.
Yeah, just absolutely amazing flooding. Just stunning just to see some of the pictures and water that is so high. Water that was so high that you emergency vehicles had a hard time. You know, these National Guard vehicles that are built for this type of thing were up to their engines and up to the windows in flood water trying to save people. And 30,000, think about this, 30,000 people were rescued. So, and those people had to be put somewhere. So it's an extraordinary, just an absolutely extraordinary situation there. Now here is a little bit more from Louisiana.
Lived in Louisiana all my life for 36 years, and I've never seen it at this magnitude before. Hundreds of roads across Louisiana are closed now. So one thing we're starting to see is people, you know, trying to drive around barricades, and obviously that leads to a dangerous situation. So we ask that people, you know, if they don't need to travel, please don't travel. Don't drive around those barricades into those closed roads. We don't want to have anyone stranded, and that definitely hampers the ongoing rescue efforts. We did have motorists stranded on I-12. We were able to clear them out. However, what we're seeing is, you know, many people decided to stay with their vehicles. These storms have affected a wide area of Louisiana. A large path of flooding, people are being displaced from their homes, people needing to be rescued. I can tell you it's in the thousands. You know, this weather incident has affected many people across a large area of the state of Louisiana.
Man, it is just flood after flood after flood. And I read where they got 4 trillion gallons of water in a 3-day period. Isn't that incredible? All right, here's on the Blue Cut Fire in San Bernardino. San Bernardino is Southern California.
Is
9,000 acres, 0% contained. Jerry Brown declaring it an emergency area, and I don't think this clip has any dialogue on it, but a lot of people, a ton of people, in California that are menaced by this fire. Let's take a break here. Dexter Gordon with us, 650 AM Las Cruces. Dexter Gordon was also an actor, and he's deceased now, but he was in some interesting movies. A very charismatic, interesting person. 650 Kelly O'Connell, and we will be back. All right, so there's a picture or pictures, and this is a website called Heat Street. It's a new website. I've never seen it before. Hillary Clinton in various pictures being propped up by pillows, and not just while she's sitting on a couch. Also, she's getting interviewed at a restaurant or someplace. She's got pillows behind her back. And so the legend grows of Hillary's inability to be a vital candidate, to be, so she's got chairs where she, you know, there's chairs where she's at a place giving a speech, a auditorium, whatever, pillows behind her back. So it looks like everywhere she goes, she needs a pillow to sit up, which is interesting. Now, you know, she's like some reanimated critter, really. I mean, it's like they're doing it. I'd like to know what drug she's on, what they're pumping into her to keep her going. And I'm not kidding when I say that. After I saw the clip that I had mentioned to you, look up on YouTube Hillary's seizure, and you'll see that she's talking to these reporters and suddenly closes her eyes, gets a strange grin on her face, and begins to bob her head back and forth. And then her eyes kind of pop open, and she turns to the left and says, "Boy, you need to taste these chai teas. They're delicious." And she really presents a picture of a person who's trying to fight off total decrepitude. She just looks like she's about to fall over every time I see her. I mean, she's, you know, that's just one event. So another story, America to hand off internet in under 2 months. AmeriCommerce said to hand off the last control of the internet under America. So think about this. What is it? The United Nations that's going to run the internet? And this is kind of a Jimmy Carter thing. We owe it to the world to give back the Panama Canal. Why? Even though we built it, even though we controlled the area, and we're in a better position to keep it open than any other country or any other body, because Jimmy Carter was an early globalist. Globalism, the idea that mankind as a body has to run everything, that the nation state, that individual states, that patriotism and nation first are dead ideas, and we have to, whether it helps us or not, and clearly in many ways this globalism has not helped us. So we'll come back and talk more about the fallen officer, the fallen hero. 6:59 on the button. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. Good to be back in the chair and with you. And we'll come back after break on the hour. Good morning to you, Kelly, back here. I was gone in court for a couple of days, fortunately for somebody else, not myself. All right, so I've got, well, we're going to get into this officer's situation, the young hero who was killed. But first, I'm not going to do weird news today, but I do have a very strange story. You know, I think I mentioned before, Florida is the home to about half of the weird news stories that you find on the internet for some reason. The combination of people in Florida is also the world headquarters of face cannibalism. Remember that guy on the causeway in 2012 who ate the skin off the guy's face and was holding him down, and they finally came up and shot him? Well, now Martin County face biting attack, where a teen who was apparently on hallucinogenic drugs and was with his parents at dinner. He was just 19 years old himself. He had gotten up from the table, stormed off because the waiter was too slow. And he had gone out and ended up, I don't know all the details of this, but he ended up attacking a couple of people that he didn't know and killing him. And he was biting off parts of the man's face when officers found him totally out of his mind. And they said he had superhuman strength and the taser had no effect on him. He was a former wrestler in high school, a strong young kid, but it took him four or five adult men to pin him down.
Yes, there's a girl laying on the ground. He beat her up. I ran over there. I'm bleeding profusely here at the moment.
Okay.
I don't know what happened.
It's the South Florida gruesome murder getting national attention.
I'm not sure I even have the words to tell you how I feel.
An innocent couple killed. And that's just the beginning.
They turned a dog loose on them, and it just didn't do any good.
Good evening. Among the many disturbing facts about this attack, it's that police believe the victims had absolutely no connection at all to their suspected killer.
He exhibited superhuman strength and inhuman behavior. We've got team coverage for you, beginning with CBS4's Carrie Codd, who is live in West Palm Beach. Carrie?
Yeah, we're outside St. Mary's Hospital. That's where a neighbor who tried to stop this attack is recovering from surgery. Investigators say the suspect, Austin Haroof, stabbed that Good Samaritan five times. While that man recovers from surgery, the sheriff of Martin County says they're still trying to piece together all the details that led up to this brutal act. Michelle Stevens and her husband, John, were enjoying a summer night in the open garage of their Tequesta home on Monday, investigators say, when Austin Haroof is accused of attacking them with multiple weapons, stabbing them to death, and then taking bites out of John Stevens' face.
I don't know that I've ever seen anything with this much violence.
Martin County Sheriff William Snyder said they cannot find any connection between Haroof and the murdered couple. He said it's a random attack.
None of this makes sense. There's just not one thing in this case that seems to make sense.
Investigators say Haroof, a student at Florida State University, left a restaurant Monday evening after becoming upset. A short time later, and just a short walk from his father's house, Martin County detectives say Haroof went wild on the Stevenses. Investigators are checking to see if there were drugs like Flocka in Haroof's system. The sheriff says Haroof did not cease his attack despite dog bites and tasers, and it took multiple officers to finally stop him.
The big unanswered question is why he did this and what was the influencing factor.
Also injured was a neighbor who tried to stop the attack. We're told Jeff Fisher saw what was happening and ran to help. Investigators say Haroof stabbed him five times in the neck, back, and side. We heard Fisher's 911 call.
There's a girl laying on the ground. He beat her up. I ran over there. I'm bleeding profusely here.
Fisher told 911 he didn't recognize the attacker or know exactly what happened.
Well, I think he had a knife, but I'm not positive.
Steve Fisher says his son is going to survive his injuries.
The guy turned on him, and thank God Jeff Evans had enough sense to get back in the house.
The Martin County Sheriff says the suspect, Haroof, is a good student with no criminal history. He said Haroof was a wrestler and in top physical shape. The sheriff said Haroof is in the hospital, and his condition is bad enough that he might not survive. He said the family of the suspect is also torn apart.
They of course, are overcome with grief and are dealing with the fact that what their son did. And now they're facing the possibility that they'll lose their son entirely.
The murder not only took the lives of two beloved people, but shattered the tranquility of this quiet community.
Yeah, it's a tragedy without words to describe.
The sheriff told us they did not find any of the typical drugs in Haroof's system after an initial test, but the sheriff said it will take a more involved test to determine whether a drug like Flocka was in his system. The sheriff says if it was, it may help explain this level of violence. Live in West Palm Beach, Kerry Codd, CBS 4 News tonight.
And West Palm Beach is a very trendy upscale area, and there's a lot of very wealthy people that live there. So, unbelievable though, huh? Let's take a little break here. Here's a poll for you. Let me get some headlines for you. Poll: 3 out of 5 Texans say secession if Clinton is elected. Well, I guess Donald Trump can stick that state in his pocket. Campaign manager out. Breitbart Boss, which is a conservative website, is in. Alarming, unprecedented amount of demonic activity in America. So what would cause that? Well, if you're not a Christian, not religious, it just means that people are becoming more open-minded and experimenting more. If you're a Christian, you see your country walking away from God and the vacuum is filled by whatever. Trump calling Hillary a bigot who talks down to communities of color, and Russian military massing forces near the Ukraine. Aetna, the latest insurance company to decouple from Obamacare, leaving less and less insurance companies, and pretty soon it's going to be what they originally wanted. They wanted to create a system that was so shaky and implausible. Imagine this, an insurance industry based on the idea that you cannot stop anybody who's sick from signing up for insurance. So there's absolutely no motivation to get insurance until you're ill. And so it's like getting highly discounted health insurance for any disease that you might have. And the companies that are selling it can't stop you from signing up. So here's the law of unintended, or in this case, intended effects. The intended effects of this is that the insurance companies would only take on people who are ill or desperately sick and then be forced to pay for all their treatment. Of course, that's not a business model. It's a bankruptcy model. Half of all refugees admitted to the United States this year were Muslim, 30,000. Why is the president doing it? The same reason he brought in Obamacare. He wanted to shatter who America was and rebuild on a socialist model. Uproar: his restaurant sells Black Olives Matter shirts. Isn't that hilarious? All right, so let's take this break and come back and get into the fallen hero who went down. And there's some stories that I got into last night researching that I can't really get into today because I want to focus on this fallen officer, but found out some more interesting stuff about Hillary. 523-1450 to Colin. Great to be back with you. And you're listening, and thank you very much for tuning in to AM Las Cruces on KOBE. 523-1450 to call in. We'll be right back. By the way, I wanted to tell you on a little bit of Beck Watch. Glenn Beck is now claiming that Donald Trump has created a white, a model for white people on Black Lives Matter model. Glenn Beck has lost his mind a long time ago. 7:16, we'll be back. All right, so the the shooter of the police officer is Jesse Denver Haynes, who is in custody right now, the person that they believe shot the fallen officer. Now, he was charged with federal firearms and carjacking offenses coming out of this August 12, 2016 police stop. Now, if you're wondering, how did the officer get shot in the shoulder and end up dying? What happened was he was bent over, from what I've been told anyway. This is somebody who knew something about the shooting. He was bent over at the time, must have seen this Haynes guy with a gun in his hand and made a move for his own pistol. And Haynes shot and it went into his shoulder, but it traveled through his body and came out his kidney. So, and it was a 45 Magnum, which is a pretty heavy piece of artillery. So it would have just plowed a real big hole through his body. And I don't know what his, you know, if he had made it, what his health would have been like. The police had pulled over. The police had pulled over this gentleman, and of course, that's a misuse of the dictionary there. But these two scumbags, and they had some. This is a very strange story. They had picked up some random guy in the back seat who just happened to have meth with him or something, and were driving along and went through Hatch, and it was just this officer's unlucky day. He was working on his day off, trying to make a little bit more money, undoubtedly, for his two kids. Pulls these guys over, and, you know, it's just like these people that it was reading the stories about the police officers who were shot in the line of duty, and then the killer shoots themselves in the head. Just shoot yourself in the head. I mean, if you get in a tight spot and you feel like you have to kill somebody else and that your plan is to commit suicide, just blow your brains out, you know? Go do it at the dump so we don't have to bury you. Federal charges have been announced by U.S. Attorney Damon P. Martinez and Special Agent in Charge Terry Wade of the FBI's Albuquerque Division. And joining them in the announcement, Mark D'Antonio, frequent guest here, 3rd Judicial District Attorney, Chief James Gimler of the Hatch Police Department, Chief Pete Casadas of the New Mexico Police Department, and Doniana County Sheriff E. V. Hill. Haynes, 38, resident of Columbus, Ohio, charged with being a felon in possession of a firearm. He was a prison bird, a jail bird. Spent a lot of time in prison already. Carjacking and discharging a firearm during a crime of violence. And Haynes was arrested this afternoon on the federal charges by the FBI at a hospital in El Paso, Texas, where he's recuperating from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. And in addition to those charges, he's been charged with the first-degree murder of Officer Chavez. So the criminal complaint says that Haynes and passengers fled from the area after the shooting in Alexis. Haynes shot himself in the leg groin area after Haynes and his passengers parted company. Haynes stopped at a rest area near Radium Springs, where he shot another person to get their car. He carjacked a Chevrolet. The motorist suffered a serious injury and remains hospitalized in stable condition. And so the guy that he carjacked was the person who was able to give a description, and that's how they were able to chase him down. And when they pulled him over, they were able to get a firearm out there. He was actually locked, you know, had the car windows up and a gun, and they had to get him out of there. He was holding himself hostage. And if convicted of the crimes charged in the federal criminal complaint, Haynes faces a statutory maximum penalty of 10 years in prison for unlawfully possessing a firearm, 25 years in prison on carjacking. And if convicted for discharging a firearm during the carjacking, Haynes faces a mandatory minimum penalty of 10 prison years, which has to be served consecutive to any sentence imposed on the other charges, which means coming afterwards. and these potential penalties apply only to the federal charges and are beyond any penalties imposed by state law. So you're looking at a guy that's probably, I don't think they'll have any problem convicting him of all these things. 10 years federal custody for having a firearm as a felon, 25 years in prison as a carjacker, 10 more years for discharging a weapon during a carjacking. So that's 45 years right there. And the state hasn't even dealt with him there. So this guy is going to, I'll predict this right now, he's going to spend the rest of his life in jail. All right, let's come back and continue on with this tragic story. And consider going to that GoFundMe page. Just Google GoFundMe and the officer's name and give a little bit to the family, because you know what? No more breadwinner for those kids. 727, and they've lost a role model and a father, and a, from what I understand, a great guy, a loving friend. We'll be right back. Flying those friendly skies with a little bit of turbulence at 727 AM, Las Cruces AM 1450, 523 1450 on KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, we'll be right back. Well, they've got pictures of Hillary at heatstreet.com in various positions in various places, public and private, more public speaking engagements and interviews and wherever, sitting on people's couches. She's propped up by pillows at every place, like an old poodle, sometimes these people, have this ancient dog and they'll put it up on the couch. It can't really move. It's blind, toothless, whatever. And they arrange it on a pillow. So it's put it into maximum comfort. The dog, a beloved member of the family that they can't imagine being without. That's what Hillary looks like. Some old toothless poodle that they're just keeping propped up on a pillow. It's very, very interesting. All right, before I get into the Chavez killing in Hatch, Officer Chavez, woman takes plea deal in Rio Rancho's officer shooting death. This is an interesting story. The woman was accused of being an accomplice in the slaying of a police officer. Tabitha Little faced 6 charges, including first-degree murder. Remember, if you're in a vehicle and somebody in the vehicle shoots or kills another person during a felony, generally speaking, the people in the vehicle are all charged with first-degree murder, for example. So, felony murder rule. So she was faced with 6 charges, including first-degree murder, attempt to commit a felony, conspiracy to commit armed robbery, aggravated fleeing, harboring or aiding a felon, and false evidence or registration. All right, so this is what happened. She's with this guy driving around and named Romero, Andrew Romero. They're driving around looking for a place to rob up in Albuquerque. And all of a sudden they see a cop. And she said that this Andrew Romero guy, that this would-be burglarist that she was driving, and that she saw this police officer and started driving erratically so he would pull them over so he would take Andrew Romero into custody. And instead, what happened is the police pulled over the car. She claims that Andrew Romero stuck a gun on her and say, give him a fake name or whatever. So she said to the cop somebody else's name. He went and checked it. It didn't check out. He came back, and then Romero sticks the gun deeper into her ribs reaches over and puts his feet on the gas, and he says, put it into drive. So basically, then when the cop was there, then Romero pushes, and she refuses to cooperate. He pushes her out, shoots her in the foot, and Benner, the cop, the police officer, went to check on the woman, then approached the car. This is a bizarre story. Then Rio Rancho police said Romero shot Benner three times. That's another situation. This guy, I mean, the, in my opinion, in a lot of these situations, the police officers act with too much restraint. He should have just turned and, you know, opened fire on the car. I mean, this guy's already shot somebody. Anyway, another fallen hero there. All right, I've got for you now a little bit on the hitchhiker. This poor slob that was picked up and got caught up in this whole thing and then was found to be carrying drugs. KOAT.
Flowers, posters, and balloons. They can now be found throughout Hatch, all set up for fallen officer Jose Chavez.
This appears to be about that's not what the story says, but this is about the vigil.
They're just doing their duty. And just feel sorry for their family.
Police say the 33-year-old had only been on the force for 2 years before he was gunned down Friday. His death has sent shockwaves to the tiny community. One by one, people have been paying their respects where Chavez was shot. Many, like Mary Lou Hernandez, wish those fugitives never drove through their town.
Those people weren't even from here, you know. They brought violence with them.
Across town, a memorial on this lone Hatch police car has grown, solidifying the support Hatch continues to show its officers and Chavez's family, and the support that will continue. Tomorrow, Chavez's body will be escorted back to Las Cruces, where it will stay until his funeral. That will take place sometime next week, but many are expected to line I-25 for the procession tomorrow to salute Chavez for his bravery. Hernandez says he's earned it.
He's a young person with a whole long life to live and just got taken away from.
Chavez's body is expected to leave Albuquerque at 2 p.m. tomorrow. During the procession, authorities ask that drivers respectfully pull over to the right side of the road, and they ask anyone who planned to view the procession to be safe and aware of their surroundings. Back to you.
Okay, so his body was returned. I have a little bit of an interview, initial interview. Let's take a break and let me play that for you. So before we take a break, friends and residents of Hatch mourn loss of Officer Chavez.
Honoring his life. Jamie.
Evan and Josie, the doors of the Hatch Police Department remain open tonight. And let me show you why. Taking a look inside, this entire memorial set up for Officer Chavez. You could just see so many candles here, flowers. This sign also reading, "Rest in peace, our hero." And the people of Hatch today, obviously very emotional. Some telling me, though, that Chavez was more than a hero, that he was born to be a police officer, and that he died doing what he loved. Standing on the side of the road, Enrique Maldonado and his mother cry. Maldonado tells me he was best friends with Chavez for over 20 years.
He was one of the first friends that I met when I first moved here from California. And from the day one that we hung out, we were inseparable throughout our teenage years and through our 20s. We did everything together.
He came to drop off flowers at this memorial. You can see balloons and a Spider-Man hat. There's an American flag that reads, "Thank you, Officer Chavez, for your protection." Numerous families stopped by to show their respect.
His family, you know, he's someone who protected us, and it's just very heartbreaking that he's gone.
Some said a quick prayer. Then, just down the road, another sign of remembrance. Standing alongside a Hatch police car filled with flowers, a Carlsbad police officer silently reflects.
It's like losing a brother. Brotherhood. It's really hard. Even though you don't know him, it's something that just hurts inside. It's really hard on all of us.
For Maldonado, he says Chavez was also a brother.
If I could just get one more chance just to shake his hand, give him a hug, and say, "Hey, man, good to see you. Great to see you. Good to see you. Love you, brother." That's what I would say to him.
And I did speak with the police chief of Hatch today off camera. He told me that Chavez was a great officer, an incredible parent, and he said that he was always happy and always smiling. Reporting live from the Hatch Police Department with our New Mexico Mobile Newsroom, Jamie Warren, ABC 7.
Jamie.
All right, folks. We'll take a break, 7:40, and come back. We'll switch gears. I got 1,000 stories here, but anyway. Oh, man. What a terrible story to have to report on. But, you know, we'll definitely keep moving, but it is hard to hear. You know, you hear about somebody in this, you know, sometimes these police officers get a bad reputation, but he sounded like a great guy. 7:40 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450, 523, 1450 on KOBE. Thanks for joining me. I've got a little bit of weather here for you. All right, so vice presidential candidate Mike Pence is going to be coming, let's see here, August 16th. So yesterday, according to the story, Republican vice presidential nominee Mike Pence, governor of Indiana, held 2 campaign events in New Mexico yesterday. The first was a town hall meeting held in Sandia Resort and Casino, and 600 people attended. And so anyway, they're starting to come into our state, believe it or not. And looking to see what else you guys might find interesting here. Let's see here. I think that it's interesting that it looks like the hackers are hacking into the NSA that monitors everybody in America and supposedly used to or still does. I'm sure they still do it. Records all phone calls, all texts, all email. They have a copy of everything that happens on the internet. And I find it funny that the NSA gets hacked. You know, it'd be great if somebody hacked them and deleted all their information. And they've got this giant warehouse, a massive place in Bluffdale, Utah, where they store all this stuff. And it's got to have 10 trillion gigabytes of storage, something like that, you know. Got a story here for you. Oh, man, here is something about CNN has dropped down behind MSNBC. For viewership, and CNN is like the personal network of Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton and all her deranged grandeur. How does she keep going? I mean, she's obviously still suffering the effects of her head injury. Apparently has some sort of an epileptic disorder. Doesn't seem to have the muscle. Muscular strength of a 3-minute old kitten, and she just looks sick. She's got to be propped up on pillows, like some aging dictator in some African, you know, tyranny. Well, I just found a story along the lines of. I couldn't believe when I found this. But anyway, I'm sure you've heard of Home Alone, but I've got another story for you. I'm looking here, though. Let me play this. I think what we'll do is I'm going to play a little bit on this CNN, the Butt Kiss TV network. And then we'll come back and do weird news for the rest of the show.
Joining us us right now. We had hoped to have a satellite thing, but things went haywire, so he's joining us on the phone from Milwaukee. Good morning, you, Sean.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Yeah, so I don't know what happens. I got up really early. The generator, I got all dressed up and no place to go, and I got left at the altar, and the generator on the truck blew up.
Apologies. So you could have stayed in bed, Sean. You got up, got dressed, took a shower. You could have just stayed in bed and picked up the phone. Sorry
about
that.
Yeah, just do one thing. Whatever that, whoever put that picture up, it's hideous. Please take it down.
Oh, the one that picture?
Why?
What picture do you want?
I don't want a picture. I look better on the phone.
Oh, okay, Brian, it's next to you. Can you do something about that picture?
All right, can we push that aside?
Good job,
aside.
Man.
There we go. That looks great. Thank you.
Fantastic.
Anyway, good morning. You know, I watch your show every day. I feel like I miss you guys. I only get to see you in passing in the hall.
All right, this is too much to handle. All right, I mentioned to you the brush fire that is burning out of control in California, Cajun Pass, 18,000 acres, 0%, zero, listen to this, 0% contained, out of control, 80,000 people ready to be evacuated. So strong winds, bone dry brush and 100-degree temperatures, and this is called the Blue Cut Fire, so keep your eye on that. All right, we'll take a break and come back and do some dedicated weird news. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450, Cali. 748, KOBE. All right, kids, ready for your weird news. Mom arrested after toddler found home alone sucking on a frozen chicken. News that you don't hear every day. Check it out.
The cops were called to this home in the 100 block of East Emma Avenue around 10:15 yesterday morning on a report of a toddler left home alone. When officers arrived, they found a two-year-old boy in the backyard wearing only a diaper that was full and sagging, and a T-shirt. Police say the child was sucking on a frozen chicken breast.
Shocked and angry, very angry. I mean, I can't believe somebody would do that to their child. I really can't.
That's a horrible thing. It's a chicken breast. I mean, that's like E. coli and like a salmonella. I mean, oh, man, that's really bad.
Police say a small terrier mix was jumping on the child trying to get the chicken. Neighbor Ken Mitchell says he's had a few dealings with the dog and the child's mother, 30-year-old Hallie Elizabeth Amick.
The dog is very hyper, very, wouldn't want it around children at all. Like, really, my girlfriend and I had spoken about this woman because of the dog and the child. I was like, imagine if this is how she's dealing with the dog, what's the baby doing, you know?
Officers spoke with the neighbors who told them the child was often left unattended and had even been found in the middle of the street at one point. A next-door neighbor we spoke with was absolutely shocked and appalled by the news of what police say happened.
Well, how can the mother can leave the baby like that? If I saw it, I just go scrap the baby, my own. This, I feel sorry for that baby.
No one answered the door the two times we stopped by today.
Left on the front door is a card from the Iowa Department of Human Services.
Amick was charged with child endangerment for the incident. She was also charged with possession of Schedule I drugs. When police searched the home, they found marijuana and drug paraphernalia.
Home alone, toddler sucking on frozen chicken breast. And it actually sounds like the mother was training the kid to be able to get into cage fights because they've got that... they've got the dog fighting with the kid over this piece of frozen chicken while the mother's out, who knows, at the club dancing her butt off while her kid is getting salmonella. All right, more weird news. I'm looking into the archives here to find a massive treasure trove of weird news, and we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Yeah, Kelly, it's Tom.
Good morning, Tom. What's up?
Good morning. Is it true that when the news came out on that Milwaukee shooting, that they said that that youth was unarmed? The officer shot the black youth with a gun.
Well, I don't. Yeah, it's a good question. I can research it real quick, but I believe that it was admitted. I haven't heard anything for a couple of days. Undoubtedly, new news is out on it. The last I'd heard, the kid had a gun and supposedly his hand on the gun, and there were pictures of the kid that were released that were really kind of jaw-dropping. The guy was he was a young guy covered with tattoos, a complete gold mouth, and he had in one picture a pistol he was pointing at the camera. In another one, he's holding an assault rifle. And he claimed to have already been shot himself twice.
Is it true they're still rioting in Milwaukee because of that?
Yeah, well, you know, the best way to deal with unfairness to black people is to go into the black community and burn down black businesses and then steal from them at the same time.
Okay, Kelly.
Thanks, Tom. Have a great day. All right, folks. So, well, let's... I think I've got a little report here for you we could look into. Milwaukee police officer target of online threats following shooting. And a Milwaukee police officer was the target of accusations and threats Tuesday from people who believe he shot the black man whose death sparked violence and days of unrest in the city. Authorities have yet to identify the name of the officer who shot Sylville Smith. Social media posts and at least one other news report identified him as a 24-year-old patrolman. And 3,000 people have put a picture of this guy on Facebook. And the guy's going to have to, he's going to have to move, right? Smith, 23, was shot and killed Saturday after a brief foot chase that followed a traffic stop. Police said Smith had a gun in his hand when he turned toward the officer who opened fire. The state is investigating. So... here is a little bit from, let's see if we have enough time for this. Here's from Fox News.
Tonight, more racial strife, this time in Milwaukee on Sunday morning. The New York Times ran a headline on its webpage saying, quote, unrest in Milwaukee after police fatally shoot unarmed man. That headline was false. Papers now retracted it, pointing out that the ensuing article did say the suspect was armed. Man in question, Sylville Smith, 23 years old, killed by a black police officer after fleeing a traffic stop on Saturday. Police say Smith had a gun, and they have video to prove it. Smith has a long record with gun-involved crimes as well. Now, that incident led to violence in the street in Milwaukee. Businesses were torched, 31 arrested so far, 11 police officers injured, and an 18-year-old shot in the neck by an unknown assailant. All in all, another awful display in America. Joining us from Milwaukee, Dan O'Donnell, radio talk show host on WISN.
All right, so that covers the basic details. Kid, I'm telling you, the pictures that I saw were just this is like somebody out of a rap video, totally covered with tattoos, a complete grill in his mouth, total gold teeth, holding a pistol into the camera in one and holding a AR-15 or something else like that in another one. Here's another story that is just so disgusting and sad. Good Samaritan killed after helping two South Carolina teens get pulled out of pull their SUV out of a ditch. Two South Carolina teens who just happened to be black, could be a coincidence, were arrested on murder charges Monday after allegedly killing a Good Samaritan who helped them out of a ditch in their SUV. Deion Frazier, 17, Michael Dupree Taylor, 19, denied bond. And according to North Charleston police affidavit, two teens asked the victim, identified as a 45-year-old Chadwick Garrett, to pull them and their 2016 Dodge Durango out of a ditch. Witnesses told authorities that Garrett agreed to help the pair with their SUV for $20. And after that, he helped pull the pair out and ask about the $20. Frazier took out a gun and allegedly fired several rounds, striking Garrett in the chest. So that's the country we're living in. Thanks for listening to the show. And, glad to be back. Hope you have a great day, and we'll meet you back in 22 hours. KOBE AM Las Cruces 1450. Ciao.